One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, Fran, I always start giggling when I ask you these questions because I know you so well, and I just like I feel like I'm introducing you to other people in the right. Depth of you. So I know you like love a true crime moment, like a Snapped, a First 48, right?
Not you like using my actual favorite shows. I'm just pulling them out of thin air. I do love a true crime, and not that this is something I should brag about. First 48 took place in my own backyard when I lived in Miami. One of my apartment buildings was featured on an episode.
Girl, I'm glad you made it out.
I was watching the show and I was like, that is my lobby. Okay, cool.
You're like, wait, that's my dog. That's me.
It was so terrifying. And I ate it up.
It was in your lobby?
Somebody, a guy jumped. This was before I lived in the building. He jumped off of his balcony at the pool. And there was a whole episode about it because they were trying to figure out what apartment he came from, what happened. He had killed his girlfriend or something. I mean, it was crazy. And I was eating my kettle corn and enjoying every second of it. It's so terrible.
Literally eating it up. we've also commiserated about this because, like, both our mothers love them too. And I have this weird theory, and I'm not a woman, so please push back and correct me if I'm wrong. But I just have this theory that women are in, like, constant fear of some man. It's not funny, but some like deranged sociopath trying to hurt them, kill them, or rape them. That they watch these shows like to see the red flags, to find the red flags.
Oh, I 1000% believe that. And it's really messed up because it's this idea that, well, if I was better prepared than that freaking weirdo, then, you know, you listen to these shows and you're like, got it, you know, never walk down an alley, never do this. I mean, it's like internalized victim blaming, I guess. Ooh. It's like really weird because I listen to the things and I'm like, see now what I would have done. And it's like, you don't know what you would have freaking done, you bitch. Like,
right. But it's also crazy that you have to walk through the world that way. You know, I think it's crazy you have to walk through the world that way.
Mm-hmm. And it's also wild that this has become entertainment. I mean, we bonded over our moms loving true crime. Lerna loves a murder. If there's a murder, she wants to watch it.
Ooh, wait. No.
Listen. wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it. Welcome back. I'm Francesca Ramsey. Let Me Fix It is the podcast that says if you want history done right, you got to fix it yourself.
Ooh, I love that. And I'm DeLon Grant, and this is Let Me Fix It, your resident fix for history's nicks and cuts. See what I did
there? Ooh, a topical intro.
And like I said, today we're talking about Lizzie Borden. Fran, what do you know about Lizzie Borden?
Okay, I remember that she had a little jingle. Wait, is it bad to call this a jingle? Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 wax, and when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
How just insensitive. People are dead out here, guys. In the streets, dead. Y'all are making tunes.
You know what? We don't do that anymore. We don't have little ditties for murderers. That's the only one I know.
I know. Remember, the shark has tiny teeth. They're from Mac the Knife. Another murder song. Just ridiculous.
Wow. No, you pulled that deep from the recesses of your mind. I didn't know that one at all.
Listen, she's a songstress. but the song, the jingle you just mentioned, it starts to talk about the story, but it doesn't really get into like the sensationalized version of the truth and what it became. So Lizzie Borden became infamous for being the main suspect in the brutal axe murders of her father and stepmother.
Okay, wait. Stepmom? Why is the song Mother and Father? Well, you know what? I guess gave her stepmother 40 wax kind of messes up the cadence. It's like, gave a stepmother 40 wax. Maybe it's like a little syncopated.
I love that every time. 40 wax. That is like.
40 wax.
That kills me. Wait. It doesn't scan. It's kind of like if, you know, Mary had a sort of little lamb, a kind of little lamb, a medium-sized lamb. You know,
Mary had a plus-sized lamb. Mary had a petite lamb.
Right. Why has it got to be a little lamb? Right. We're body positive here.
Exactly.
But the thing that's really wild about Lizzie Borden is that she was actually acquitted of the murders. So the song is a bop, but it's a totally inaccurate bop. Like, where's the acquittal bridge, right?
Yes. The song needs more bars.
Thank you. I got some.
Okay. Ready? Okay, wait, he's a songwriter.
Okay. She said she didn't do it. The lawyers couldn't prove it. So Liddy got away with it when she got acquitted. Ooh, you didn't
Not
know.
Not you turning it into a rap.
That's the extent of my songwriting.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, there's okay. a new
You listen, give me that Miranda money, okay? Shoot.
Honestly, I love that. I mean, here's the thing that is bothering me is that the song is propaganda, dare I say, bopaganda.
With her puns, here she goes.
Okay, but here's what I want to know. Why hasn't anybody set the record straight on Miss Lizzie Borden?
Well, her story, it's totally like been in the zeitgeist and like the subject of books and podcasts. There was even like a movie in 2008 that really didn't go anywhere. But there's also the Lizzie Borden musical. I'll take a deep breath there because, girl, you know me and turning every semi-interesting story into a musical. Not everything should be a musical, guys.
That's fair.
There is one thing that I watched that I really want to mention. It's called History's Mystery.
Please like, always say it like that.
It's also like from the 80s, but it's about Lizzie Borden. And a psychologist who was mentioned in the documentary made a really good point. The story, whether she was acquitted or not, has all of the elements of a really fascinating story. It has murder, right? It has a woman who society at the time deemed proper and a lady. It has money. And it also has the psychological mystery factor, like where we ask, like, how could somebody do that? How could somebody axe murder their parents, you know?
Yeah.
There were like 2,000 people that showed up to the house after the murders. People couldn't turn away.
No, oh my God, not it being a tourist attraction. You know what? I'm like surprised, but also low-key annoyed that she hasn't had more of like a cult iconic status. Because in my mind, if like Charlize Theron can win an Oscar playing serial killer Eileen Wuornos, and then we've got Elizabeth Holmes and Anna Delvey, like the white lady scammers are having a moment. Like, truly, you freaking rob somebody blind, then you get a limited series. Like, bet. So why can't the original wrongfully accused girl boss murderer, Lizzie Borden, why can't she have her moment?
You know what? We're about to give it to her. Let's fix Lizzie Borden's story. Let's dive in. Okay, Lizzie Borden was born on July 19th, 1860 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Just 3 years later, her mother dies. And then Lizzie's father remarries Abby Dufresne Gray in 1865.
Okay, Papa was a rolling stone. He said, I'm going to get in these streets.
Yo, well, look, girl, listen, you know the patriarchy. He probably was like, let me find another woman to take care of these children. Okay,
oh, that's
he could
so,
not be bothered.
Oh, that is so, I mean, do what you got to do, but setting the stage for some drama.
Ready? And his name was Andrew Borden, and Andrew Jackson Borden, we're calling you on it, sir. So he also was a coffin maker, and like, I mean, right? The irony. I mean, everybody dies. I just thought when I read that, like, God, what another nail in the coffin, you know?
Oh, ooh, he's a writer. I'm sorry. Now you're going to clown me for my bad puns. I'm going to get you for that one.
Listen, it rubs off. It rubs off. So in 1892, John Morose, Lizzie's uncle, arrives to stay with the family at their home. She lived with her father, her stepmother, as we all know, and she also lived with her older sister, Emma. And Lizzie's relationship with her stepmother, Abby, was kind of strained. Ooh. This was also because Lizzie and her sister, they were 32 and 34, respectively.
And wait a second. I did not realize that. they were that old.
Yeah, so they were like spinsters, right?
Oh,
comparatively.
Well, first of all, 32 is not a spinster. Wait. Not you letting a little casual misogyny slip out, sir.
No, wait, listen. This is the context of the time. Come on. Okay. This is 1892.
Not me taking it so personally.
Okay, it's like the turn of the 19th century or turn of the 20th century. So it's not me. It's
no,
them.
I know. I'm just teasing. But so, like in my mind, she was like a teenager.
I think that's what everyone thought because of the way they painted her, like this innocent woman, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I guess, but she was acquitted, so she technically was innocent. And the other thing about the Bordens is in Fall River, Mass, there were hundreds of Bordens, or at least like 120 of them or something like that.
Oh.
And most of them had inherited the money from textile mills, and Lizzie and her sister's father had to earn his money, and they lived way under their means in like the lower part of Fall River.
Okay.
So the rich people are up on a hill, and the poor people live on the bottom, and that's where Lizzie and her family live. So there was already salt in the wound because Lizzie was like, yo, we have all this money.
And we are 32 and still live with our parents.
Right.
Like,
and women of the time and of their stature kind of were looking for husbands and families, mm-hmm. like a household mm-hmm. to take care of. So they were bored, too. They have nothing going on. And
the Bordens were bored.
Okay.
So, it's giving reality shows, bored with the Bordens.
Where's MTV when you need them? Okay, so the tensions were already growing in the household with the Borden family, right? Mm-hmm. In the months before the murders, especially with Lizzie's father and some real estate transactions that had happened. So Lizzie's father, Andrew, gave Abby, her stepmother's family, real estate for free. She bought her stepmother's sister a house, and Lizzie and her sister Emma were pissed.
Oh my God.
Right?
Listen, the housing market is a nightmare right now. So I would be pissed if one of my family members, if my father gave away a house for free to my stepmom.
Your dad, when you've been asking him for help and money, like what?
Oh my God.
They threw a fit, so their dad actually sold them a rental property that he had that he owned. They grew up in this rental property. It was their grandfather's, I think, Andrew Borden's father. And their dad sold it to them for $1. Then a few weeks later, before the murders, the girl sold it back to daddy for $5,000 because the rental property income was just not enough to live on.
Okay, I admittedly do not watch Selling Sunset, but I don't think that that's how real estate works. $1 and $5,000? Like, that feels kind of sketchy.
Also, like, $5,000 is $163,000 in today's money, so I'm also like, give me that money.
Shit, that is so wild. Okay, so the story gets even more weird leading up to the murders because the night before, Lizzie and Emma's uncle, John, came and stayed with them for a few days to discuss some business matters. And their dad, Andrew, was a little speculative of the conversation, particularly all the property stuff. And so that was just making an already tense situation. So for several days before the murders, the entire household had been violently ill.
Ooh.
A family friend thought that maybe it was food poisoning, but the stepmom thought that maybe they had been poisoned because apparently Andrew was not well liked in Fall River. Now, isn't that some shit? So he had enemies, and yet Lizzie takes the fall.
I'm stymied. Right, there was no one else was considered.
I mean suspect. Again, like if her first instinct was somebody might have poisoned him, that tells me there might be other suspects. But anyways, I digress. So on August 4th, 1892, Lizzie Borden alerted the family maid, Bridget, to her father's mutilated body found in the living room. He had been hit 10 or 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon while sleeping on the sofa. So the song is full of lies.
She said I was bamboozled.
Why did they do 40 whacks instead of 10 or 11 whacks?
Girl, sensationalism. Sensationalism.
Oh, my God. Okay,
I mean, listen, 10 is a lot of whacks. 10 is a lot of whacks.
Not you adding some inflation whacks. What's going on?
I can't stand you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so the body of Abby Borden, Lizzie's stepmother, was found in the family guest room, and she had been struck 18 times.
So obviously the police get involved. Lizzie gives answers to the police when she's first interviewed, and at the time, the police said that they were strange and a little contradictory. Mm. She initially reported hearing a groan or some scraping noise or a distress call before entering back into the house when the murders happened. Then 2 hours later, she told the police that she heard nothing and entered the house not realizing that anything was wrong. When she asked where her stepmother was, she recounted that Abby had received a note and was asked to go visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if anyone can go upstairs and look for her. The family maid, Bridget Sullivan, and a neighbor, Mrs. Church, were halfway up the stairs when they looked into the guest room and saw Abby lying face down on the floor. Yo.
Ooh, that is so gruesome.
I never want to see a dead body, but the image of it makes my stomach
turn.
No,
and not just a dead body, like hacked up like that is really violent.
And you guys, the photos are gross. Ooh, I mean, obviously.
They're in black and white and they're still gross. Like,
still
vivid. They're really bad.
So most of the police officers who interviewed Lizzie reported that not only did they not like her demeanor, but they disliked her attitude and that they thought she was too calm and poised, which feels a little sexist, I'm not going to lie.
Super sexist. She probably was in shock.
Right. How could she not be? Like, two people were murdered in the house. Also fear that, you know, if she didn't do it because she allegedly didn't, or she was acquitted of it. Like, also, there's a murderer about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Totally.
So despite her change in behavior and her alibis changing, they didn't check her for bloodstains, which was later criticized. The police also didn't check her room very well. They didn't go super in depth with they were also criticized for that. One of the major reasons for that was the decorum of the time. A man, police or otherwise, they just didn't go into a private home and go through a woman's personals.
Wow. So not sexism, hurting and helping her.
Okay.
That is so wild. Okay, so in the basement, the police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle. The hatchet head was suspected of being the murder weapon, as the break in the handle appeared fresh and the axe had dust on its head, unlike that of the other bladed tools. And it appeared to have deliberately been applied to make it look like it had been in the basement for some time. However, none of these tools were removed from the house. This is giving LAPD. Like,
okay.
Y'all are just like, maybe we'll try to figure this out. So because of the mysterious illness that had stricken the household before the murders, the family's milk and the victim's stomachs during the autopsies were looked at, and they were tested for poison, but nothing was found. There were also some rumors that Lizzie had purchased hyaluronic acid from a local drugstore, which could have been used to poison the family. But Lizzie was like, no, that's not what I was using it for. I was cleaning my furs, which I don't even know if that's a real thing. But okay.
What acid? I don't make no
I mean, it does sound strange, but I mean,
I'm not a scientist, but
I mean, maybe the fur was alive when she got it.
The damn fur.
I had to dip it in the acid before I threw it over my shoulder.
Remember those fox furs where it's like,
and that little
head. Oh my God, disgusting. So fucking
yes,
nasty.
Yes, that's totally, that's probably what she was rocking. So one of the other reasons for suspicion was on August 5th, 1892, the day after the murders, Lizzie and her sister Emma put out a large ad in the paper offering a $5,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of the persons who occasioned the death of their parents. And that left people to speculate whether, you know, this was a substantial reward, was a real thing, or was a deflection. I mean, truly, damned
argument.
If you do. If they hadn't taken out an ad, people would have...
You're so right. Ugh. They're like, y'all just sitting up there counting the money. That's what y'all are doing. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. Instead of like passing judgment, maybe you should be looking for some clues. Maybe. Maybe you could get the reward, you freaking judgmental jerks. Okay. So the police subsequently arrested 32-year-old Lizzie, and Lizzie's trial took place in New Bedford starting June 5th, 1893. Now, 5 days before the trial, there was another axe murder in Fall River.
You lie.
Come on now. The victim, Bertha Manchester, was found hacked to death in her kitchen. Suspiciously, there's no limerick about it. No rhyme, no crime, may you ask me.
As she rhymes. Wait, poor Bertha. Not a copycat yes. hacker.
Poor Bertha. Nobody remembers her. And like, come on now. This feels like I've listened to enough podcasts to know. This is a clue. The similarities between the Manchester and Borden murders were striking and noted by jurors. However, Jose Correa de Mello, a Portuguese immigrant, was later convicted of the Manchester's murder in 1894, and it was determined that he was not in the vicinity of Fall River at the time of the Borden murders.
I mean, I want to know. I don't know. I have questions. I don't.
You know, here's what sticks out to me. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Because, look, they found a light brown man, and they said, this is who did it.
Absolutely. And, you know, when before they even looked inside the household, the Borden household, with those murders, they went down to the Portuguese harbor, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they started rounding up people. Because they were it had to be one of these people.
I'm sure they did. But it's also just so interesting, all of the points where it seems like they decided that they knew who it was and or they weren't going to do any research. Because how do you not look at the suspect for blood? And also, an axe murder, there's going to be blood. There's blood all over the house. So
there has to be.
There's no blood on her. Visible blood, at least, right? So if you didn't see any blood, that tells me, I don't freaking know. It just...
Well, and there were also reports of like a friend of hers saying that they saw Lizzie burn a blue dress because there was quote unquote paint on it.
Okay.
And it doesn't add up. I mean, again, she was acquitted, so we're here to prove that she didn't do it. But what if she did?
I mean, look, what we're really here to prove is that Lizzie deserves a chime to shine.
Thank you. Now, just to talk about the trial really quick, Lizzie's defense argued that she was innocent, obviously, because there was insufficient evidence to convict her. However, the prosecution presented circumstantial evidence that painted a suspicious picture of Lizzie's actions and behavior around the time of the murders. One key piece of evidence was Lizzie's conflicting accounts of her activities during the times of the murders. When Lizzie Borden went to trial, much was made of her odd behavior after her father's death, her failure to grieve in that quote-unquote normal, quote-unquote acceptable way, mm-hmm. and her inability to grasp the situation she was in. Okay, again, sexism, right?
Yeah, you know what this reminds me of is Amanda Knox. It was the same. I mean, and there's something about, you know, Lizzie and the wax, Amanda and the Knox. I don't know. Like,
you better find a pattern.
But it's the same thing, right? Where this idea of, well, you must be guilty because you're not acting the way I would act if this had happened to me. And nobody knows how they would freaking act if their parents were murdered and then you were on trial for the murder.
Well, and it's also, I agree with you so much just because like, the shock of it all, mm-hmm. the idea that that's happening to you or that you're involved in anything like that is like so perplexing. I can't imagine it. And so for it happened to me, I don't know how I would react, but maybe I might be really sober, right?
Yeah.
One of the rationales around why Lizzie had strange testimony with the police is that she was semi-sedated because she was in shock. A doctor was giving her morphine sulfate to keep her calm. Girl, she was high as a kite.
Okay,
she was high as a kite.
That totally checks out because if you've ever met somebody who's like right fresh off of like the grieving process, oftentimes they do feel like a zombie because they're just like in absolute disbelief. I mean, I'm sure there's some scientific evidence for why this is, but I would guess it's like your body kind of goes into like protection mode. Like sometimes people don't eat, they don't sleep. I mean, they're just like a shell of themselves.
Well, because it's also like how you're body and brain are processing them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I feel like a lot of times what we feel doesn't necessarily balance with what what logic we have in our heads.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't know what you're feeling and you don't know what to do. So the expectation that you're supposed to behave again in a specific way is completely erroneous. So, you know, she was high, she was on morphine sulfate, and in the end, her testimony was actually thrown out and couldn't be used at trial because she didn't have a lawyer present.
Oh, what?
And yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, she didn't.
Oh my God, they were just making this up as they were going along.
Yes, she didn't have a lawyer present, and she was being questioned as the prime suspect without even knowing it.
Oh my God.
And she has to be told that. You have to be told, hey, you're under arrest, and anything you say is going to be used against you. Miranda rights, bitches. What?
Oh my God, listen, hello, that's like the first thing you see on Law and Order.
So despite the circumstantial evidence, the jury eventually acquitted Lizzie Borden on June 20th, 1893. Can I just remind the class that though they acquitted her, Lizzie was not judged by a jury of her peers. Women were not allowed to sit on federal juries until the Civil Rights Act of 1957. And then it took until 1973 for all 50 states to make it legal. And then it took the Supreme Court until 1975 to make it a constitutional protection. I'm just saying.
Wow. I mean, it's so interesting because I would assume that would have gotten her a conviction. Because I don't trust a bunch of men to like look at this in a fair way, right? I just feel like sexism is so inherently present in like our experiences, and the way she was judged for like not grieving the right way, it's kind of shock. Not me complimenting a bunch of men from the fucking a bunch of, you know, we know y'all have some questionable values back in the 1800s, but I'm gonna hand it to y'all. Y'all gave Lizzie a fair trial.
Well, I will say, I'll go back to your point about sexism on both sides playing in Lizzie's favor, right? Because they also said at trial the defense attorney that she had was the former governor of the state, who also appointed one of the judges on the judge panel, because they had a three-judge panel.
Wow.
And he also coached her on how to respond to things. You know, the claims are she was acting and fainting at the trial. So the men were also like, oh, she's behaving ladylike. So how could she do it? I think it just plays both sides.
Wow, that's so interesting.
It's so crazy. Back to the case, it attracted significant attention and public interest. And Lizzie Borden has remained the subject of fascination and speculation for years. The crime scene, this is crazy to me. The crime scene itself has been rebranded the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast Museum.
No.
Since 1990. No. Are you going, Fran? Are you going?
Absolutely. You know what? Actually, if I ever get married again, honeymoon
I
location, let's go. That is so morbid. Why would anybody want to stay there?
You know those like, you know when you go to like a theme park and they have those like Western style things where you take a photo? I can imagine like it's just like a bunch of a family with a bunch of axes, you know, in front of the house.
Oh God, that is so creepy. So now that we've talked about Lizzie's history, let's talk a little bit about Lizzie and pop culture. So we as a society have tried to make Lizzie happen a number of times. She has been the subject of books and plays and films, often exploring the question of her guilt or innocence. And I really think that the Borden murders resonate because, you know, we just never really know how the tragic events played out. So a few times she's been captured. There was a Lizzie movie in 2018. It was directed by Craig William McNeil, and it was starring Chloe Sevigny and Kristen Stewart. It is based on the true story, of course, of Lizzie Borden. Chloe Sevigny served as the co-producer. So the film had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival in January 2018, and it was released September 2018, but it didn't really go anywhere. Like, I was so surprised that I couldn't find, like, award nominations. I did watch the trailer, and it was interesting because I don't know who Kristen Stewart plays in the film, but they had some gay moments in that trailer.
Oh, did they really?
I wonder if that's in Kristen Stewart's like writer. She's like, must have gay stuff in anything that I'm in. Because she and Lizzie were giving each other looks, and at one point they were like about to kiss in the trailer. I was like, what's going on?
That's why I didn't give it an award or wasn't acknowledged, because they were doing too much. You know. Also, if I'm writing this screenplay, he hasn't written anything. But if I'm writing this screenplay, where am I focused? Am I focused on the household or am I focused on the trial? I think the more interesting thing is what happens in the household leading up to the murders, and then it's like blackout. You don't see the murders. That's how I'm in.
Yeah. I didn't watch the movie. I just watched the trailer, and like the trailer has all the elements of something that feels, you know, like a good movie, like a thriller. But I was definitely thrown off by the, like, are Kristen and Chloe about to scissor? Because like,
scissor.
Like, sorry. Axe. So there, they're gonna swap axes. Okay, so in 2014, Lifetime had a TV movie called Lizzie Borden Took an Axe. And they were like, you know what? Not enough. Not enough. They followed that up with a 2015 series called The Lizzie Borden Chronicles, starring Christina Ricci. She loves a dark character.
You know, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to them. That's really good casting.
Is it good casting? She just like knows her brand. I mean,
We're actors. Please give me a role where I can play myself. Let me be clear.
Francesca has not booked in a minute. I'm not shading you, Christina. I'm just saying she was like, Wednesday, got it. I'll play Wednesday for the rest of my fucking life if I have to. And I don't blame her. I just think it's funny. Like, I don't know if she was right for this part, but apparently both series got mixed responses. There's also a Lizzie musical, which the New York Times describes as a gothic rock ritual with riot girl attitude, an eerie hybrid of rock club and turn of the century New England parlor. Which, what is that? That's like a fucking Mad Lib.
Truly, there are these musicals. I have to mention this. There's musicals that were like these rock musicals of a certain time, yes. Very angsty. Like they took like Green Day's song and made American Idiot. You know, there were. I can't think of another one off the top of my head, but I listened to a couple of the tracks on this musical, and I was like, oh god, it's just so of that ilk of that era that I wasn't really interested in it. But then I want to circle back to like the first song. Francesca, absolutely really? Not.
Why? What does it sound like?
It's not bad. It's just like creepy bad. It's like this dissonant, atonal, like creepy lullaby with a chorus of children singing the song. Lizzie Borden took an X. You have to. It's so. We'll put it in here because it's creepy. It's so creepy.
I don't think I listened to that one. I just listened to a few clips from the website. It felt like Avril Lavigne wrote own version of the Lizzie. You know what I mean? And even the outfits kind of felt like they were wearing the period outfits, but like the way the women were styled, like they all had like spiky hair, like
dark
neck collars
makeup
on,
and
dark makeup. It was just weird. Like it just, I don't know. Again, similarly to the movie trailer, again, didn't watch the full Lizzie movie. It just feels like these ventures were adding too much, and the story has more than enough. It doesn't need all the sauce.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
So now that we've talked about Lizzie's history and how pop culture has tried to give her, you know, her story a breath of fresh air, it's time for us to fix it. How would we revamp Lizzie Borden's brand? Because I'm going to say it. I really think she deserves it. Let me fix it.
Let me fix it.
What's your fix, Fran?
So, you know, even though we didn't like what we heard of the original musical and the movie, I think that Lizzie needs a flashy movie musical. So like kind of like a Les Mis style or Phantom meets Pearl. So like high production value, bloody, campy, huge stars. You know, we really need a prestige white woman. You know,
I'm groaning.
You know what I mean? Like, listen, there's a thing that people are calling Instagram face. Like there's a very modern looking face. We don't want that for this movie. We need a woman who looks like she has never had Wi-Fi or indoor plumbing.
She's never seen an actual mirror already.
No, not she has no Botox, no veneers, a natural face. So I think a Keira Knightley could be Lizzie Borden. I don't know if she could sing, but you know what? Like even Anne Hathaway could be interesting.
You know, Hollywood kind of tossed Anne Hathaway out for a minute, or Anne Hathaway took a break because she was like, you know, I need a break.
They were really punching down on her after she won her Oscar. But I think she's talented. She's not problematic to my knowledge, and she can sing. And she has that vintage, you know what I mean?
Like that innocent, like prop that you feel for her automatically. She's that white lady that you go, oh,
right? Yeah.
The innocence about her.
Yes, but you could also see her being a little dark and shady, right?
Mm. If nothing else, when her getting dark and shady, I'd be like, oh, wait a minute. It'll be a nice turn. Not us writing it.
Who would you cast in a Lizzie Borden movie musical?
I'm not going to get her name right, but who was the woman, the actress who is in, The Craft, the dark one.
Faruza Balk.
Faruza Balk. I don't know where she went, but let's bring her back.
I love that you mentioned The Craft. That is one of my favorite movies. We absolutely need to do an episode about that because
they did
a reboot of that movie.
Did they really?
They did, and it didn't do very well. I love Faruza Balk. I don't know if she could sing, but I love her for Lizzie. Wow, that's a really good call. She has an old school face.
Yeah, well, and I also do, like, you know, in The Craft, she's like, and all her roles, like, she had that dark hair, that makeup. Mm-hmm. Even if they did dress her up, she has not only that face, but she has that energy, right?
Yeah.
Of like, you like, and she has dark featured and those bright eyes, and you're like, something's not right behind those
something's
eyes.
Going on, like something's bubbling beneath the surface with
you
her.
You know?
So what would you do for Lizzie Borden?
So there's this lady, her name is Danelle Fatibinay. I can't say this, Fatibinay, whatever, who says that Lizzie's sister came to her in a dream and confessed to the crime. She says she confessed to the crime and she wrote a book about the experience called I Did It.
Oh, listen, Danelle is not a writer. Like, come on.
Well, listen, you know it's self-published, okay? So I don't know if Danelle's right, but I'm willing to ask the question. So my fix is, let's open the case up again. Let's make it a cold case because she was acquitted of it. So somebody had to do it. Let's start talking up, looking for who the real suspect is. Emma Borden, maybe. I don't know. Reframe the narrative.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing. I really enjoyed, I don't know if you watched the Dropout series, which was about Elizabeth Holmes and it was starring Amanda Seyfried. It was fantastic. I would love a mini series cold case file about Lizzie Borden. You know, we could do some ancestry.com. Let's find some of Lizzie's relatives.
Yeah, and like I said, in Fall River, there were like 100 some odd of them. So the Bordens are, I'm betting they're still in Fall River, okay? Let me go on the internet and find somebody, okay?
That is so funny. I also could see like Lizzie being rebranded as like the anti-hero, like, you know, on like t-shirts and like posters and, you know, really give her that free Lizzie. Oh my God, I love it. Like, I just think that she could, like, maybe it's like Lizzie's mugshot on a shirt or something.
Ooh, I love that.
I would buy that.
You know, I mean, the Lady Danelle aside, you know there are Lizzie fans out there because there are people that go to this house. They go to see the house in Fall River, right? Mm-hmm. So where are the stands out there? I feel like we need to, like, start a movement.
Yes, that's true. Listen, if Charles Manson could get fan mail in prison, aww, absolutely. You could send Lizzie Borden a DM. You can write her a letter like, let's go. Where is the Lizzie fan club at?
For real. And you mentioned Charles Manson. I also have to bring up Jeffrey Dahmer. And there, mm-hmm, I'm sure there's another one that I'm... Ted Bundy is another, mm-hmm, one. We are so overly consumed by these murderers, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't get it. Like, I don't get why we give them so much attention. I can't watch that stuff. I mean, no. This is interesting because she was acquitted and it was such a mystery, but like Ted Bundy?
Exactly. Somebody that we know, like, there's something different about someone who's acquitted and there's still a lot of speculation around who did it versus somebody who like killed and ate people and the families of his victims are still alive and they've been very vocal about like not wanting this stuff dredged back up. And it's a perfect example to your point of just like sensationalizing freaking white men in a way that is just totally inappropriate and gross when there are so many stories that deserve to be told. And in this case, it's like a cold case. There's no answer to it. All the more reason to continue investigating it. We know Ted Bundy did it. Like, why do we need another freaking series about him?
Even Jeffrey Dahmer, like that was the most recent one where, mm-hmm, you know, the families were like, please don't do this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're right. I don't know why we need to completely rehash this over and over again. Also, like, I feel like it just promotes more violence in our society. We have enough of it.
Seriously, I am all for a Lizzie Borden rebrand, and I hope that you guys are inspired to give Lizzie her flowers too. So now that we've dug into her history and how we would fix the brand, it's time for everyone's favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give our props to those who've turned themselves around without our help. So DeLon, I'm going to let you go first. What's your glow up?
My glow up is theme parks. Hear me out.
Okay. Theme parks have always been popping.
Right. So this is a personal statement. This is personal journey. So come with me on the journey. Let me strap you in on the ride. Okay.
You building the world.
Okay. He's kind of a rider bitch. So I went to a theme park. I've been working in Orlando and I went to Disney and I went to four parks in one day. And then I went to Universal with some of my coworkers. Yeah.
I didn't know it was four in one day.
Yeah. That was a marathon. That was too much. I'll never do it again. But I'm glad I went. I'm glad I saw Disney. It was fun. It was great. Now, Universal, we went to Universal the next week. Yo, that is my jam. And here's where I get to the glow up. I went to, you know, theme parks growing up. I went to theme parks as an adult. I was a camp counselor. We went to theme parks. Always kind of enjoyed it, but whatever. Mm-hmm. As an adult, going and having the thrill of almost feeling like you're going to die. You know, it's like, I want to... Ali Wong has a joke about this. It's like, I want to feel like I'm going to die, but I'm not going to die, right? Mm-hmm. Choke me like I'm going to die. So like,
we getting real personal on the pod. Okay.
Well, listen, it is about us, isn't it?
So yes.
The feel of like you're going to die, but then gravity saves you. There's something so elating about that. And also the feeling of weightlessness, also the feeling of that level of speed that you don't feel in life. It was so thrilling. And it was like a high. Every time I came up one of these rides, I felt like a kid. I was skipping, I was jumping, I was laughing, I was scream laughing on these rides.
My
so
God.
Theme parks have it for me. I'm a believer. I am gonna go back twice a year, semi-annually. I'm putting it in the budget because it really gave me so much therapeutic joy. I'm for real, Fran. You should come with me.
Oh my God, not you working for Big Theme Park. I have to say, you and I are so different. I don't want to be on a ride. I'm terrified.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. I get sick. I get like
motion sick.
Yeah, I get motion sick and I feel scared. Like I want to keep my feet on the ground. Like I am very risk averse. You know what I mean? Like
I think that's why I'm shocked because I am pretty risk averse too.
I know. That's why I mean, but that's why it's a glow up for you because it doesn't seem, you know, I think the other thing about it, like just knowing you, like, you're very funny and we have a great time together, but you're also serious. Like, I'm you're very serious. And so, like, the thought of you skipping wearing little mouse ears at the theme park is just, like, so foreign to me.
And I think it was foreign to me too. And it's like, as an adult, we are going deep here. You're totally right. As an adult, I just, like, it's rare that I have that level of awe, of wonder, mm-hmm. and excitement there. And I just didn't, you know, I'm a jaded, cynical New Yorker. So I was like, oh my God, I can feel this. This is how kids feel, right? It's like that theme parks work. It's a magical place on earth, you know?
Oh my God. Well, listen, yeah, so. I've lived in LA for 3 years. So now I'm in my woo era. And it sounds like the theme park was healing your inner child.
It was. It did. So that's my glow up. What is yours this week, Ran?
So my glow up goes to crochet. Crochet is really having a moment. We used to think of, you know, those weird square blankets that your grandma would make, and you always see them at the Goodwill. I always thought
not
of crochet.
Not shading grandma.
No, listen, I'm just saying that was where most people connected with crochet. Something that, like, elderly people would
do. A doily.
A doily, exactly. But it's really making a comeback in fashion. There's a lot of designers and boutiques that are experimenting with crochet bikinis and bucket hats and handbags and dresses. And there is a boom of what's being called cottage core and grandpa core.
And oh my God, what is that?
It's just like it's kids wearing, it's the Gen Zers wearing clothes that feel
vintage,
antiquated. It's like big poofy dresses, and it's lots of like homesteading. So like growing your own fruits and vegetables and like making bread and just like living this kind of like soft life. Like, you know,
Laura Ingalls.
Laura Ingalls. Like, you ain't got no indoor plumbing. Like just you know, just really taking it, that musty earth smell.
I'm dead. Yes,
you
heard.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's really cool. Young people are really embracing home crafts and slow fashion. And I really love this because I was really into crochet. My grandmother taught me how to crochet. And people kind of made fun of me. I remember in college I was wearing like crochet hats when I was locking my hair.
Do you remember I was crocheting and wearing crochet hats as well?
Wait a second. In college, too?
In college, yeah. My freshman year. I made them, like, senior year of high school and into college. I had so many of them.
Oh, my God.
This might have been before we were, like, actually locked in as,
friends.
Yeah,
you and I really became friends, like, our sophomore year of college. So I feel like maybe we were just, like, ships in the crochet night in that way. But I was also very into crochet. You know what? I think my crochet boom happened after I left college, because that's when I started my locks.
Yeah.
After I left Michigan. And, you know, here's the thing. I love that y'all are finally on board, because as usual, I was a trendsetter. I was making little bikini tops and bags and headbands. But it's so cool seeing people get into crochet now, because it's really easy to pick up. It's meditative. It gets you off of your phone. You can do it while you're watching TV. And you can make some really incredible things. The kids, dare I say, are hooked on crochet.
I can't.
On TikTok, there are 15.5 billion views on videos tagged crochet. Wow. For comparison, knitting videos have about 2.7 billion views. So shout out to everybody out there crocheting. I love it. I've always been a crafty person. So it's really cool to see people are embracing their inner crafter.
I hear you on that. I mean, the idea that, like, you can do something that's, like you said, meditative, and at the end of it have something to show for it is really cool. And I also think, you know, there was that the fidget spinners that were a thing in the last 5 to 10 years, especially kids I know with autism use them, because, like, there were, I forget what they call them specifically, but it helps them with their nerves, right? It helps them to have something to do. Crocheting is like a really good example or opportunity therein, right? Just
move
your hands and have something at the end of it.
Yeah, there's something like really cool about the process of like doing the hook in and out of the yarn. And to your point about having something afterwards, there is nothing like wearing or sharing a creation that you made and having somebody stop you and say, oh, I love that thing. And you're like, I made it. Like, it's just it's the best feeling. And so it's really cool, especially because we are so digital, and I'm guilty of it too. I'm on my phone all the time. I create and edit on my computer. It's so cool to see people giving themselves permission to do something off of their phone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really good for your brain.
And not that I'm going to take up crocheting, but I can't wait to see what you're going to send me, Fran. What are you going to make?
You know what? I will take that challenge. I haven't done it in years, but I would love to get back into it.
She is always about it. Guys, this is the last thing we'll say before we end, but I was at Fran's house, two visits ago. And I was like, wow, these like cute little paintings are so great. Where did you get them? She's like, I made them. And I was like, obviously you made them. Yeah. Why did I even ask the question? Guys, that is our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate you.
So before we go, we would like to hear from you. Who had the better fix? Or is there another historical figure that you think deserves a musical biopic? Or maybe you just want to suggest a TV show, a celeb, or a brand that we should fix in the future? Please hit us up on our Instagram at FixItPod.
So we know that you enjoyed this, but we want to hear about it. So if you would, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast app is.
I'm Francesca.
I'm DeLon.
And this was Let Me Fix It.